God's Revolution, a series in 12 parts by Don Taylor, with Bernard Hepton as Cromwell and Nigel Anthony as Fairfax. Part 6, Discussions at Putney. The Presbyterian leaders have fled, the army has marched into London, and John Church has returned to find his wife Betty has run away with an itinerant preacher. Meanwhile, suspicion of Cromwell and Fairfax is growing, and the young radicals in the army are making plans to overthrow them. Discussions at Putney.
My dear father, before you say anything unfriendly towards me, I will read scurrilous things in the Royalist news sheets. Let me tell you myself what happened at the Council of Officers 2 days ago. There is to be a full council of the army in Putney Church at the end of the month, with all the new agitators present. Fairfax, being an honest man who seeks peace and concord even where there is none, invited all the officers to meet him at his chambers in Whitehall.
Above all, gentlemen, I beg you to understand the true nature of our discussions, whether in this council of officers or in the council of the army, what things are permissible to be discussed and what things are not. Our purpose here is principally to consider the army's heads of the proposals and our negotiations with the king. We are here to bind up the wounds of the kingdom, not to overturn it. I see many papers here, which some among you make great play with, which are not the business of this meeting.
Lord General, there are many among us who believe that these papers are the business of this meeting, and its most important business too. The matters contained in this document are more important than a settlement with the king. They concern the fundamental liberties of the people.
May I speak, Lord General?
Please do, Commissary Ayrton.
Colonel Rainsborough misunderstands on a fundamental point of law. This army was raised as the servant of the Parliament to preserve that Parliament's liberties against a tyrannical king. That purpose we have accomplished. And now, all that is left for us is to re-establish the king and his Parliament within safeguards! Within safeguards that will guarantee those liberties which were in danger before we took up arms. Beyond that point, gentlemen, we have no legal right to do anything at all. Certainly not to set up states and constitutions at our own whim.
You ask the soldiers if they fought to put the king back on his throne, Commissary, and you might get a different answer.
The king, Lord General, not among the men, nor among many of us.
Very many of us, Excellency, are more than unhappy with how far the negotiations with the king have gone already.
Lord General, let me make it clear to all these gentlemen that the king is king by undisputed right from his father. Who else can we deal with but him? How else can we come to a binding up of the nation's wounds without making some sort of agreement with the king?
Why not by making an agreement with the people, Lieutenant General?
The king is the people, Major White. He is their head and representative. There can be no other.
I hold in my hand a document drawn up by the troopers and soldiers of no less than 5 regiments of horse, and with the general agreement of very many more. It states that since we can no longer trust the king, and have no way of knowing that he'll honor any agreement we might make with him, he should now be ignored. And that the agreement should not be with him, but with the whole people of England.
A covenant which every man and woman in the nation will sign, and which will guarantee our liberty through all the succeeding generations. Major White, this isn't a time for dreams and fantasies. There is a law in this nation, and we cannot simply ignore it.
Lieutenant General, negotiating with the king is like repairing an old and rickety house whose foundations are unsafe. The moment you put the capstan on the roof, the whole thing collapses round your head.
Let me repeat, Major. There is a law in this country.
Law? What law? If there's a law, why are we sitting here debating this question at all, while the Parliament waits meekly for the outcome of our deliberations? Why is the king our prisoner? There
has been a war, Lieutenant General. Many of our good friends have died in it. And war, by its very nature, means that law is at an end. We have reverted to a state of nature, gentlemen, where the only law that matters is the law of the sword.
Major White, what your citizen outrage?
But it is true, Lord General. The king wouldn't be listening to us if we hadn't defeated him in battle. And nor would the Parliament if we hadn't chased Hollis and Stapleton out of the chamber at sword point. Why pretend? There's only one law in this country, and it is the law of sword and pistol. We can discuss and enact whatever we like, because we have the power to put it into action.
Major White,
be silent! Sir, I have said nothing more than the truth.
As your commanding officer, I order you to be silent!
What the Major has said is an insult to every soldier in this army, and to all those who have fought and died for the liberty of Parliament. I propose that he be immediately expelled from this council, and that he be not allowed to sit with this council or any council of the army again.
Is the man to be allowed to speak in his own defense, Lieutenant General?
He has spoken enough, sir. He has already condemned himself out of his own mouth. I propose we vote for his immediate expulsion.
Never. I agree. Never. Let it be put to an immediate vote.
And let me make it quite clear, gentlemen. Either Major White leaves this chamber, or I do.
Of course, that frightened everyone into submission, and I was expelled almost unanimously for saying what we all know to be true. I've never seen Cromwell in such an uncontrollable rage. I heard of his famous bursts of fury, but I've never seen one before. It's a terrifying sight, and demands a man of the greatest courage to stand against it. So, the short and long of it is that I cannot speak of Putney or anywhere else. Rainsborough says I was lucky not to be cashiered. But it's the injustice of it rather than the luck that I feel most burning.
Francis.
Oh, Jack, what have you come out?
Listen, what on earth?
I haven't expelled you.
What were you doing in there?
You didn't even vote for me. You sat there with your hand resolutely down.
Of course I didn't, because it was clear you were going to lose.
Friendship ought to have dictated at least some...
What has friendship to do with it? Are you serious, or is this whole business only a game to you? You're one of our leading men, the hero of the Chelmsford Mutiny, and you have put yourselves hors de combat at the most crucial time. Do you expect me to be stupid enough to join you, or Rainsborough?
John, it had to be said there in that council. We couldn't let Ireton and Cromwell simply set up the discussion on their own terms.
Yes, but you allowed your temper to run away with you. And when it comes to temper, Cromwell is always going to outgun you as he outguns everyone. Would you praise a cavalry commander who risks everything at a first charge and loses three quarters of his regiment in the process? I'd call him a fool.
John, I don't think I've been a fool.
All right, neither do I, not entirely. We can still present you as the hero of Chelmsford and the army's martyr, but it's a good job some of us had the sense to sit on our hands and not rise to Cromwell's bait.
Oh, I can't bear it. To be excluded, the dishonor.
Well, never mind that now. What's done is done. Where are you going?
To my lodgings, I suppose. In St. Martin's Lane.
I'll walk up with you.
Aren't you going back in?
Why should I? The main business of the day is done, and I have something else to talk to you about.
What?
This note. Your sister.
What?
Martha, her woman, was waiting at the Royal Mews gate as I left for the meeting. She was looking for you, but said I do. As you see, it does concern me.
My father's gone mad. Does he really think Penelope's a wife of fishmongers and seekers?
I must see him formally to ask for her hand.
You say no.
Why does he insult me so nakedly, Francis?
He has very many bees in his bonnet these days. Every year he gets worse.
If I write you a letter, will you deliver it? It'll be better than an ordinary letter.
Yes, of course I will.
I'll write it at once and let you have it by tomorrow.
Why shouldn't I act as your messenger boy? I've no better function
than that. Oh, rubbish and nonsense. Still our most valued man after Rainsborough. There are plenty of others who can act as our mouthpieces.
Who? You?
No, not me.
Anyway, I enjoy being a mouthpiece.
Far too much. That's what got you expelled.
My dear Bet, it seems strange to be talking to you still in this journal I've kept for you so long, when I know you're not listening. But these one-sided conversations have meant so much to me the last 3 years, I can't give them up. And maybe the time will come when you will read them. Where are you, my girl? Where have you gone? I can get no trace of you. You're always 2 steps ahead. Brother Gerard, the silent soldier, seems my only hope. The more I get to know him, the more extraordinary a man he seems. And he certainly knows all kinds of strange, impassioned people under the dirty blanket of the city. The other day I met some people from Amersham who are determined to live the true life of the apostles with everything held in common and no possessions but the word. And there are people in London with even stranger ideas than that. Gerard asked me to meet him at a church I hadn't heard of before, over on the eastern side of the city, a place where he says he often goes to commune with the spirit. I found it through a tangle of alleys. When I got there, it was a ruin. He was sitting in a broken pew with the sparrows for company, and the open sky for a roof.
Comrade Gerard!
Come in, brother. Don't be afraid.
The wall doesn't look safe to me.
It stood for 20 years, to my knowledge. I used to come here when I first came to London.
No scriptures, no minister, not even a roof.
God doesn't need such things. I hear his voice best here when I'm in the city. Best of all, in the open field. He speaks most plainly then.
Have you any news for me?
Nothing certain. A name?
What?
Not the name he was born with. He calls himself the Son of Sion. I have met men who knew him. He was a carpenter.
A carpenter?
He left that life 5 years ago. Suddenly reappeared last year, making his testimony.
And do you think God approves him luring men's wives away and the mothers of children?
These are strange days, brother, when many mysterious things are being made known. I know many who do believe it, who say that women should be held in common as well as all other things.
If you'd seen my children, Comrade Gerard, you'd know it was the devil's work.
God is all love, I do believe that. He never wishes us pain.
It's hard, you see, after so long.
There are 5 good friends of mine living in a house near the Barbican. 3 of them know him well. We shall go to see them next week.
Why not today?
They are beggars, brother. They will be back next week.
Then I must be patient.
Look up at the sky. The sky will calm you. I wonder that any church has a roof when the open air brings God's presence so close.
Major Huntington, send Captain Reynolds in.
Yes, sir. Come in, Captain Reynolds.
But leave us alone, Major, if you please.
Yes, sir.
Come in, John. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
I brought you here to tell you that your chairmanship of the Council of Agitators is at an end.
Oh. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope my actions have given you nothing to complain of.
No, nothing in the least. Your reports have been regular and detailed, and have provided a most useful indication of what the agitators have been thinking. But your usefulness in that direction is finished.
Why is that, sir, may I ask?
The new agitators are sharper and more angry men than their predecessors. They wish for no chairman appointed for them by the officers. Particularly, they will not trust an officer from my regiment.
Oh, I don't see why, sir. I have worked most conscientiously and honestly in their interests.
And in mine.
Those two interests are not exclusive, surely. We are brothers in arms.
They may not see it that way. Nor, I suspect, in your most religious moments, do you.
Sir?
But I do not ask any man to give a record of his conversations with God. However, Captain, I hope you are still one of my most trusted officers.
I know I am, sir.
The meeting next week at Putney will be a bitter one. I am well aware of the anger of very many of the men. We shall face many difficulties.
Yes, sir, I am sure that is true.
The majority do not understand what is happening or what is at stake. We have been in these negotiations with the King for nearly 2 months, and the discussions have been difficult but fruitful. The great prize is almost within reach. I think it very likely that we shall conclude a peace with him, both sides having made concessions within a few weeks. If we can do it, our victories of peacemaking will diminish all our military victories to nothing, less than nothing. It is in that light that we must see the debates at Putney next week.
Most of the soldiers know nothing of the details of your negotiations, sir, but they are very suspicious of them.
Well, of course they are, understandably. But it is of the greatest importance, John, that nothing should happen next week to upset the delicacy of our dealings with the King. There will be much argument in public, but in private, we must convince the men that they must be patient. You are on amicable terms with Rainsborough and White and the others. Restrain them, John. Hold them back. Don't let them come into open conflict with us. We need time to grasp this great prize dangling just out of our reach. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir, I do. And I shall do my best to counsel moderation, but...
But what?
I may not succeed. I see no certainty in it, but it seems likely that there would be a majority against you if it comes to a vote.
People's minds must be changed, or a vote must be avoided.
I shall do my best, but I cannot act too openly, or I will lose my credibility with my friends.
One piece of advice for you, John, from an old cavalry man.
What's that, sir?
You can't ride two horses with only one bum.
I have never been in any doubt which troop I ride with, sir.
I'm glad to hear it. At Putney, we shall all have to be quite sure where we are going, or we shall certainly be lost.
Colonel Rainsbury, you must not consider absenting yourself, whatever insults may have been offered you.
Easy to say, Captain Audley, but since, like the dying swan, this is to be my last utterance, I shall have to do my best to make it memorable.
Gentlemen, this meeting of the General Council of the Army in Putney Church on this 28th day of October, 1647, is for public business, and anyone who has anything to say concerning public business has full liberty to speak. The Lord General, being himself ill in Lord Pawlet's house at Turnham Green, instructs me to proceed in his name as if he himself were present.
George, what is this? I didn't expect yet. About 5 minutes ago.
I can't bear to be excluded.
I was hoping to see you before I went in. Have you seen Rainsborough this morning?
I couldn't bear to get here at the beginning. I've seen nobody. I thought I might listen at the open door, but I can't really hear anything except a reverberation.
They have ordered him to relinquish his regiment.
What?
And to go and take command of the Navy.
Rainsborough, he's an artillery man. He'll never come on in a ship in his life.
Of course he hasn't. It's simply to get him out the way.
What's he going
to
do?
He intends to say what he thinks in case this is the last opportunity he gets. There is no Council of the Navy. You're late. They just started.
We needed to collect some more copies of the Agreement of the People from the printers.
We want them well scattered about the church.
Did Cromwell and Ireton have any idea what's coming?
They had none before this morning.
They saw copies as soon as they got here. There's a great deal of heads together and furious whispering.
We've got Wildman and Petty and Sexby and Everett in there, so they'll have a fight on their hands.
Church, isn't he's supposed to be here.
Yes, he is, but nobody's seen him today.
Or yesterday. He didn't come to the agitators' meeting to discuss tactics.
Well, we must get in. It looks as though they're just about to read the agreement through.
Can I wait outside? It's unendurable.
Don't. Go back to your lodgings. I'll tell you everything that happened.
No, no, I must be here.
This paper, gentlemen, is entitled An Agreement of the People for a Fair and Present Peace upon Grounds of Common Right and Freedom. Having by our late labors and hazards made it appear to the world at how high a rate we value our just freedom, and God having so far owned our cause as to deliver our enemies into our hands, we do now hold ourselves bound in mutual duty to each other to take the best care we can for the future, to avoid both the danger of returning to a slavish condition and the chargeable remedy of another.
Come on, Brother Church, don't flag. It's no more than 100 yards further up that alley to the left.
I'm not flagging.
Or are you one of those who takes more pleasure in seeking than finding? There are many men who, when they see Jerusalem, draw back and shield their faces.
By rights, I should be somewhere else. It's my conscience that's troubling me, not the fear of what I'll find.
Where should you be?
At the council at Putney. Oh. My mates in the regiment have stood by me, and I should be there.
All councillors are the same, brother. Much bad breath and more bad faith. These stinking tenements breathe purer air.
You may believe that, brother, but I don't. But since I've come this far with a guilty conscience, I can go a few steps further.
There's the house, the one with the broken door. We're in the Valley of the Lepers here, brother. These people are never mentioned in anybody's council. And yet we know what choice Jesus would have made, where he would have been.
Times are changing. Maybe he's in Putney Church now with sword cuts on his coat, bigging up for his mates.
This door might just as well be off its hinges for all the good it is.
They need a carpenter here, not a soldier.
Hello there inside. Isaac! Little Michael! Clemency!
There he is. We'll go up.
These things we declare to be our native rights, and therefore are agreed and resolved to maintain them with our utmost possibilities against all opposition whatever, being compelled thereunto,
not only by the examples of our ancestors, whose blood was often spent in vain for the recovery of their freedoms, but also by our own woeful experience, who, having long expected and dearly earned the establishment of these certain rules of government, are yet made to depend for the settlement of our peace and freedom upon him that intended our bondage and brought a cruel war upon us.
Thank you, Mr. Wildman. Truly, this paper contains in it very great alterations in the kingdom. Alterations from that government it has been under, I believe I may almost say, since it was a nation.
What do you think he made of it?
He didn't like it, but we've done it. We've put it on the table.
Now we must make it law.
Listen to the way he's speaking. When he uses that calm, reasoned tone, you can be sure there's a thunderstorm inside.
It'll come to an issue today. Slip out and tell Francis to be ready to ride to the tower to tell Wilburn what's happened.
Shall not gather together and put out a paper as plausible as this. And what do you think the consequences of that would be? Would it not be confusion?
Isaac, little Michael, I've brought my friend Trooper Church to see you.
What does he want here?
Come in, Captain Colonel, come in.
A blackamoor and a dwarf, and clemency has only four of her five wits. How are you today, John?
Tired. We walked all the way from Grantham.
Who are they?
What's the matter, Captain? Never seen an African before?
On ships and on the waterfront?
He thinks I'm the devil. Seen me in your bad dreams, have you, Captain?
Gerard told me you were beggars, and I was expecting...
Beggars? We're not beggars, Gerard. What an insult to the honourable profession of fooling. I'm a juggler. And Tumbler and Isaac eats fire. Need to a comic fight, because he's so big and I'm so small. He lifts me up and throws me about. I always win. They all like that, don't they, Isaac?
They laugh.
Oh, he's a mighty warrior from Africa, you see. And he doesn't like being beaten by a dwarf. He's in fun. He could squash me under his thumb like a beetle if he wanted to. His name's not Isaac. It's Cockeroo. But his master couldn't say that, so they call him Isaac.
Are you a runaway slave?
No. I would never have run away unless I could have got back to Africa. My master was a good man who taught me to read English, but he died.
Sure, what do they want here? This is our place.
Oh, don't worry about her, Major General. She sees visions and runs mad every now and then, but she's just tired today. Yeah. She sings like a blackbird and collects the money for us, and we look after her when she loses her wits. We used to dance and juggle outside the theatres, but the black hats don't like plays, and they've closed them all. So we had to go on the road.
What do they want? I don't like them.
Don't be disturbed, dear child. We come in love. My friend Church has troubles, and you may be able to help him.
Why should we help soldiers? You're never any help to us. You chase us away from giving people innocent pleasures, hang us up on trees, and steal all the food and horses for miles around.
It's for your freedom we do it, friend.
My freedom? Nobody ever asked me, Captain. So how do you know what my freedom is? What you mean is your new Jerusalem, and that never includes us.
It includes everyone. This very day, we're debating at Putney.
How to give all the power to the Africans and madmen and dwarves, eh?
Hey, tell us when you want us to take our seats in Parliament, Lord Colonel. We can manage tomorrow if you like.
The Commonwealth is the property of all God's creatures, Isaac. Great and small, misshapen, a whole black or white.
So you tell me, Brother Gerard, but who believes it?
So what do you want then, Colonel Captain? If you just come for a peep, shall we charge?
I'm looking for a man. He goes from place to place preaching. With women for his disciples.
He means the son of Sion.
Well, old Dirty Dan! That's what we call him. His real name's Daniel. He comes from Islington.
Oh, we saw him in York.
York?
Weeks ago when we was up that way.
And did he have a band of women with him?
No, he always had a string of women, even when he was just a carpenter in Islington. He was famous for it. That... I never wash it. You could smell him coming round corners, couldn't you?
Oh, God.
There were about five or six women with him in York. Less than usual.
Was there a small woman with dark hair and big eyes?
They all look the same when they've been with him for a few weeks.
Yes, scabby old drab.
No.
Oh, don't be offended, Captain Colonel. You asked us the question.
No, I'm not offended. Thank you.
Gary, he said he was going further up north, Northumberland and that way. Not coming back to London no more.
Yeah, too hot for him down here, you see. Too many husbands and fathers with cudgels in their hands. You're one of them, brother, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's go now. Hey. Can I give alms to these good people?
What, without doing a show? We're professionals, we are, Captain Major, not beggars. Yeah.
The news is free, Captain. If you want to do something for us, just tell your friends to leave us alone. And when they plan their commonwealth, don't include us.
Major White is here, Mistress Lilburn.
You can see no one, didn't you tell
him? He was most insistent, ma'am.
But I must most urgently see your husband.
Haven't you heard, Major?
Heard what?
None of you care a broken straw for him, and that's the truth of the matter. He can kill himself 10 times over, and none of you will even notice that he's not serving your own particular ends. He's still here, Major. Still in prison.
Sure.
And he's ill, sir. Very ill. He has been for 2 weeks. If he were dead and buried, his good friends in the army wouldn't know any better.
Where's he? Send him in. I knew nothing of his situation. John, perhaps you should rest. I'll come another day.
Tempted to what he's torn. Send him in.
Take care, Major. He's so much weakened a breath could blow him away.
John.
I'm sorry to see this.
I'm tired, that's all. Worn out. I was supposed to plead my case before the Commons Grand Committee last week. Would you believe it? I was too ill to do it.
I hardly believe you could ever be that ill.
Oh, I regretted it. I can tell you, such a chance lost. I intended to roast them. 2 days ago, I should have been there again. But I had to send them a written deposition instead.
What happened?
Oh, what always happens? Nothing. I'm still in prison.
I've been at Putney all day. I came to tell you.
Yeah,
We don't direct you to the point.
Yeah.
We had the agreement of the people on the table, read and read again inside the first hour.
Yes. And?
Cromwell sidetracked us into a long debate about engagements the army's already entered into with the house and the king. Just about everybody on earth, except the actual soldiers who do the fighting. There was a great deal of philosophy talked about the justice of keeping unjust promises and the like. All of which made it quite sure that we didn't get to a discussion of the agreement at all.
Means Cromwell has decided against
it. There's no doubt about that.
What next then?
Tomorrow morning has been set aside for a mass prayer meeting. Goff and some other of Oliver's psalm singers thought that little idea up. So nothing can happen till tomorrow afternoon, but then it can't be avoided. I don't see what can stop it.
Don't be so cynical about Oliver's prayer meetings. He always prays a great deal when he's uncertain. He waits for God to speak.
God hasn't spoken by tomorrow afternoon. Oliver will have to rely on his own judgment. Rainsborough and Wildman are determined to have the whole document discussed. You should be there speaking for us, not locked here in this prison. They won't keep you here much longer. The soldiers won't allow it.
Maybe it'll be long enough. I've always been ready to face my God at a moment's notice.
He's not ready for you yet, John. He's still marshalling his arguments.
Well, it's good you make me laugh. I don't seem to have laughed like a human being for years. Don't let him off the hook tomorrow, Francis. Press the attack on him.
If only I could. I am condemned to the role of spectator for my sin, while others lead the charge.
Oh, well, you must learn to be patient, as I've had to learn it, and sit like a housewife with your darning or your book, waiting for news of the battle.
And this paper makes me think that its meaning is that every man that is an inhabitant of England is to be equally considered, and to have an equal voice in the election of his representatives. And if that be the meaning, then I have something to say against it.
We judge that all inhabitants that have not lost their birthright should have an equal voice in all elections.
My intention was always that everyone that has fought for his liberty should be included in it. Really, I think that the poorest he that is in England has a life to live as much as the greatest. And therefore, truly, sir, I think it's clear that every man that is to live under a government ought first by his own consent to put himself under that government. And I do think that the poorest man in England is not at all bound to that government that he has not had a voice to put himself under.
Captain Reynolds,
what?
The soldiers are saying in the church court.
What now?
The most insistent, sir.
My part, I think that no person has a right to an interest or share in the disposing of the affairs of the kingdom and in choosing those that shall determine what laws we shall be ruled by here, that has not a permanent fixed interest in the kingdom.
Corporal Church, what do you want?
Sorry to call you out, sir. I couldn't think of no one else to ask.
To ask what? Be quick, man. There was never a greater drama since this was a kingdom than is being played in there today.
All right, so you go back in. I'll make me...
Oh, don't be a fool, Corporal. Since I've come out, tell me what I've come out for. Well, what's wrong with you? You were always one of our most decisive fellows.
I'm sorry, Captain Reynolds. I wanted to ask if I'm still agitator for my regiment. And as your chairman of the council...
I'm not. I haven't been for 3 days. Where have you been?
Well, that's it, sir. I've been neglecting my duties, and I wondered if I'd any right to be here.
Of course you have. No one else has been elected. Where have you been? You weren't here yesterday, nor at the agitator's meeting the day before.
I've had great troubles, sir. Personal troubles. And I let them blind me to where my true duties lay.
Well, we all have personal troubles. That doesn't stop us being soldiers.
I've been out with the army these 3 years, sir. And not being an officer like yourself, I never got back home in all that time. I've lost my wife, sir. That's the plain fact of it.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Corporal. But you're not the first soldier that's happened to, and I don't suppose you'll be the last.
No, sir, I know it's common enough. But I was determined to find her. She's gone away, you see, with one of them ranting preachers. And I've been looking everywhere around London where she's been seen or heard of. I even thought of leaving the army and going after her.
Do you know where she is?
No, sir, not really. Probably way up north by now.
Well, you'd get no permission to leave the army for that.
No, sir. I would have deserted. I know that can be a hanging matter, but plenty of men do it.
Then why are you wasting my time, Corporal? Go and be hanged.
No, sir, please. I decided not to do that, sir, or I wouldn't be here troubling you. I love my wife, sir. I do, and my 2 boys. But she's betrayed me, and seems not likely ever to return. We're about a great business here, sir, unless the Lord has lied to us all these years. I want to forget her and stay with my mates. Fight all the harder for them, maybe, if that can be. After all, I haven't lost everything. We're winning here, so I've heard.
We may be.
I want to be part of it, sir. Am I still acceptable in spite of my backsliding?
Of course you are, brother. Come, let's go back into that church together. What we're missing in there, we'll tell our grandchildren of the need just as much as our famous victories.
We have engaged in this kingdom and ventured our lives. And it was all for this, to recover our birthright and privileges as Englishmen. And by the argument, sir, we have none. It seems now that unless a man has a fixed estate in this kingdom, he has no right in this kingdom. And I wonder we were so much deceived.
Did you write that piece?
No. I copied it into my virginal book. It's by Mr. Laws.
Which one?
I don't know.
William's dead. Killed at the Battle of Chester. Henry I've met on 2 or 3 occasions. He is an Orpheus in these Thracian times. We have learned friends in common.
It's a beautiful piece. I know nothing of its author.
Stop playing now. I want to talk to you.
Is it a particular matter?
You are a great disturbance to me. My mind is never at peace, and I need peace to pursue my studies.
I'm sorry. I try to make things as quiet as I can for you.
No, not about the house. I could work with the town crier in the room, but not when my mind is in a turmoil. Do you understand?
Yes. But I hardly know what I can do to help.
Your mother had a voice like a nightingale. She couldn't play as you do, but I played for her, spinet or lute. And we sang the newest and the most beautiful songs together. We both loved music. For a year, had a musician in the house, but I couldn't afford to keep him.
Now I am your musician.
But you don't sing as she did, out of pure instinct, like a bird that knows no better. For so short a time. Shall we go back to Nunstow?
Go back?
That's what I said.
I would be happy to. You brought me here, and the city frightens me.
When you were 15, 16, that was a time of great happiness, too. When I realized what a jewel had been given me, loaned for my safekeeping. Shall we pack up then? Go back and let everything be as it was?
But... it was you, Father, who said some arrangement must be made for me. You who are planning that I should marry.
Marry? Why should you marry? Not every woman marries. All that can be changed. Why not? Man is a rational animal, and he learns from his experiences. You can stay at Nunstow, and when I die, you will do as you please with yourself and with it.
That's not possible, Father. You know that. Mun must have Nunstow.
Why? Pigs are pigs and horses are horses, one end of the country to the other. Let him go somewhere else. Oh, he can be your steward if he wants. Run the place for you, just as he does now.
He is your eldest son.
And you are my only daughter.
Father, you are too wise a man to talk such nonsense, and I won't listen.
Too wise, am I? I'm wise enough to know when I'm well off. Why should you leave me at all? You are an intelligent and educated woman. I need intelligent people around me. Can I speak to Edmund and Martha? The geese and ducks have more to say.
Of course I'll stay with you, as long as you need me. But...
But what?
Mun must have Nunstow. And you must realize that it's not an unreasonable wish for a daughter to marry, however much he loves her father. It is the law of nature.
There is no law I know in nature that says women should marry. Nor is there any law that says we shouldn't go back to Nunstow and be as we were. That suited me very well.
I was 15 then.
I've had a letter from Captain Reynolds, in spite of the fact that I made my position quite clear.
I ought to have guessed.
What ought you to have guessed? I don't see what guessing has to do with it. Anyway, you must answer him. Tell him to go away and stop pestering me.
No, Father. It is your duty as a gentleman to answer him, and to meet him if need be. You cannot simply ignore his request. Not if you are to have any credit left in London or anywhere else.
So, you are quite determined to disturb and upset me as much as you can.
I know what your honour requires, and what I require.
Very well, very well. Have your own way, as you always do. I see we shall have to stay here. We are condemned to it. We must find you a husband, however much it goes against my wishes.
Father!
You must prepare yourself to meet the gentleman whose names I mentioned to you soon. And I shall compose an answer to Captain Reynolds.
You must invite him to call here in the most courteous manner.
Oh, I shall invite him to call here, never fear. And when he does call, I shall speak to him in such a way that there will be no further possibility of doubt about anything concerning himself or any member of my family.
Gentlemen, agitators, soldiers, and our friends from London, if you can restrain your merriment for a few moments, let me ask you to raise your tankards to the man who sits in the seat of honour today, Colonel Thomas Rainsborough. That Thomas Rainsborough is an heroic soldier, we all know. And that he has done deeds in the field with the best of you, while I have been safe in my lawyer's robes. But his victory in the Battle of Putney will perhaps be considered to be his greatest and the most long-lasting in our nation's history.
Thank you, Mr. Wildman. Brothers, we have won a victory today. We have got in our hands the prize we came to this great assembly to win. An acceptance of the fact that any peace in this blood-stained nation must be based not on negotiations with an untrustworthy king, but on the agreement of the people. And that agreement is to be confirmed by a great rendezvous of the whole army, all of it, brothers, and within a few days' time. I doubt if this village of Putney and this tavern has ever seen celebrations like ours. But, brothers, we are all soldiers enough. Speaking for myself, I think my departure to the Navy is now a lot less likely than it was. We are all soldiers enough to know that one battle does not win a war. The Parliament has debated and rejected our agreement. And our enemies in the army, if I should call them that, those men who have been our friends and leaders for many years, and will be, God willing, for many more yet, who lost in today's vote so overwhelmingly, with only 3 votes supporting them. They are, like the good soldiers we know them to be, certainly regrouping their forces. There was no doubting the integrity and force of Cromwell and Ireton's arguments. And it would be a foolish man who assumed that they will now collapse and prostrate themselves before us. If we know anything at all about those men, we all know that that is not in their nature.
Yes.
guard parties here, and we have 20 minutes' ride to Turnham Green.
There's great celebrations along the street.
It's supposed to be an agitators' meeting, but there's plenty of London levellers there, too.
Do they know about Lilburn?
At ours, it. He wasn't released till after five.
And the most important thing, Henry, is not to call a general rendezvous of the army. I'm quite convinced of that.
They voted for it, overwhelmingly.
The General Council does not command the army. It would not give orders in battle, and it does not now. We will call a rendezvous, but in three separate places. Carefully deciding which regiments we call to each.
Will they stand for that?
Ask yourself another question. Will they openly rebel against it? We're not now where we were in May. Men obey their officers. We have good discipline. What I fear most is that if we have a general rendezvous, it will become like May again. And if it does, this time our authority will be gone for good.
It's a dangerous tactic, Oliver.
Now, what tactics aren't dangerous in times like these? If the army falls into disobedience and anarchy, the danger will be very much greater. It will be tyranny again, and all our heads will be off.
They don't seem to think so. Well, they wouldn't be cheering so lustily.
Always distrust large numbers of men cheering. 9 times out of 10, they're letting their brains fly out through their mouths.
Shall we ride then? Fairfax is dear, they will be getting cold.
Lord General's guard! General, salute!
Good evening, Captain. Shall we ride to Lord Pawlet's house?
By all means, sir. At a brisk trot! Forward!
Brothers, we have had a good day today. But I have one more word to say to you. A week ago, I went to the tower, and I spent 2 hours there with John Lilburn. He has been ill, as very many of you will know. And the first good news is that he is now very much better. But I have a second piece of good news for you, brothers, even better than the first. Today, both Houses of Parliament agreed that John should be released on bail. What is more, he arrived here about 10 minutes ago, and he is now waiting in the back room to speak to you.
There is no better cure for my sickness, brothers, or for any man's, than to be breathing the good, fresh air of liberty.
Your continued good health, Lord General.
Lord General.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm much more troubled by what has happened this last week than by any fever. And particularly by the news that Lilburn is at liberty.
Well, he's on bail. If he's wise, he'll keep quiet.
Has that man ever been wise?
He could not be kept in prison any longer, Tom. Not with any justice. He's more for us than against us.
Whoever wrote the agreement of the people of Lilburn is its author. I took up arms with my father nearly 8 years ago to curb the power of the king and the tyranny of the bishops, not to give a vote in the parliament to every cheese merchant, innkeeper and farmer in the country. That way we see the whole world turned upside down and no man's property safe.
The parliament must be reformed. The men who sit there are most of them venal self-seekers, not fit to do the Lord's business.
What sort of men would sit there if every man in the kingdom voted them in? Ossets, tapsters, watermen.
Well, what matters to me is that the Lord's business should be done. It matters not at all whether the men who do it are elected by 40-shilling freeholders or coalmen, bargees and brewers, provided that our liberty is assured, our conscience is protected, and our property made safe.
But today we have voted that all free men should elect members of Parliament.
Such votes are not worth the breath that utters them. The king will never accept such an idea, nor will the nobility, or the city, or the merchants, or the lawyers. Nor is there any conceivable Parliament that will pass such a measure.
But there is only this army between the nation and destruction. It must be kept in being and united. If some form of an agreement of the people is the price we have to pay, then we'll have to pay it.
Oh, Oliver, the king will never consent to such constitutional heresy.
The king, it seems to me, never consents to anything we say, nor gives us in return for all our concessions anything more than a courteous and most gentlemanly smile. What more can we offer than we already have done? Alienating half the army in the process.
He is the king. There is no other.
Yes, but it may be...
What?
We may have to settle the nation without him.
How can that be? He is the nation. Who can we settle with but him?
Oh, Prince of Wales, possibly. Or Prince Henry.
Oh, they will never betray their father.
Or with the Parliament alone.
And who will be king then?
Nobody.
Nobody?
Hmm. Well, perhaps we should have consuls or tribunes, like the Roman Republic.
I swore my loyalty to the king. It has always been my intention to see him replaced on his throne.
Tom, we have been in negotiation with him continuously for 3 months. And during that time, without ever rejecting anything outright, he has agreed to absolutely none of our proposals. Proposals which have almost caused our own men to draw their swords against us. What his real intentions are, none of us can guess. Unless to lull us for long enough to raise another war against
us. He can't do that. He has no organized force.
He has the French and Scots.
He would never be so unscrupulous as to bring in a foreign invader.
The longer the nation is unsettled, the greater the temptation, which is why we must find the solution within months. Weeks.
And if it has to be with some version of the agreement of the people, if that should be the Lord's will.
Well, then let the Lord enact it, for I certainly will not. I will not preside over the dissolution of the government of the kingdom and my father's patrimony.
Well, John, he could hardly have been more successful. We could never have imagined such a triumph when we met in your cell last week. The Grandees have been routed.
Only with words. The army rendezvous was the next step. We must speak to every soldier in the army so that he will be prepared to back what we say with action, even against his old commanders.
It ought not to come to that.
Oh, it's quite certain to come to that one way or another. Much has been said this week, but the power still lies where it was. I'm merely out on bail. None of the charges against me have been dropped.
We got further than we expected, and you are at liberty.
You cannot imagine what pleasure it is to look up at the stars, even on a cold November night. My cells were always locked at sunset. A free man is a man who can look up at the stars when he wants to.
As many an enslaved peasant can do that.
Well, so it seems to me, after so many years of storms dealings.
Are you riding back to London tonight or staying in Putney?
Oh, riding home. I've seen so little of it these last few years, I cannot afford to miss a single night, particularly the children. I'm a new boy.
I'll arrange a guard party. Captain Reynolds?
Sir.
Call out your guard trooper, Colonel Lilburn, to his home in Southwark.
There's one already, sir. I'm riding to London myself tonight, so as to meet a gentleman early tomorrow at St. Paul's on a matter of business.
Well, Captain, no business could be more important than escorting Colonel Lilburn.
Mine might be, sir. I am making tenders to a gentleman for his daughter.
Well, in that case, sir, we might safely say you're escorting me from prison and yourself to it.
Are they here?
They've just gone into Father's study.
Oh, I thought I recognised Francis' voice on the stairs.
Oh, it's kind of you, Mun, to ride up to town so quickly.
Well, the way that messenger of yours came galloping across the farmyard, I thought the house must have burned down at the very least. Put the ends off lay for a month, I reckon.
I don't know what to do. Francis is often quite impossible to reach. I never know where he is from one week to the next. And Father frightens me when he talks about Captain Reynolds. When he gets an idea fixed in his head...
You don't have to tell me, Pen. I've had a civil word from him since your mother died. Or I gave up Latin. One or the other. He means well for us in his heart, however fierce he gets.
What terrifies me is that he might suddenly arrange some marriage for me. And that Francis and Jack might be anywhere. Somewhere I couldn't reach them and then...
If that happens, get yourself a coach or jump on a horse and ride to me at Nunstow. Day or night, any time, so you can find some good, trustworthy fellow to ride with you. I've nothing to do but stare at the frozen fields this time of year.
Oh, I know that's not true. But thank you.
He'll always be safe with me, till the mania calms down, and the old fellow finds some other scheme to obsess him.
Is that it? I suppose so.
Well, 1 week it's the movement of the spheres. The next, finding an unsuitable husband for his daughter.
I wonder what's going on in there. It can't be anything good.
Well, Captain Reynolds, I have invited you to my house as mere courtesy demands that I should. You had better say what you have come to say. Though why my son should be here, I don't know, this not being any business of his, as far as I am aware.
Francis is my friend, and I asked him to come with me.
What is said here does concern me, Father, and I'm also here as a witness.
A witness, sir? A witness to what?
So that we will all be quite sure what is said and what not.
Do you not trust me, sir? Do you call me a liar?
No, but your eyes and ears are not mine. They may see and hear things quite differently.
Oh, no philosophy, sir, please, or you will soon be out of your depth. Drowned, in fact. Drowned.
What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. Come on then, Captain Reynolds, say it and let's be finished.
It gives me no pleasure, sir, to meet you in this mood. But I am a gentleman, and of a gentleman's family, and these things must be done in the proper manner.
I come to ask for the hand of your daughter Penelope, whom I wish to marry as soon as conveniently possible.
Do you?
I have, over the last year, obtained her love, and she is of the same opinion and wish.
How can that be, sir, when you have been denied access to my house, and she has been forbidden to see you?
I need not explain to you, sir, the many ways by which people come to love each other. You are too wise a man not to know.
Well, well, well.
I am the third son of Sir James Reynolds of Castle Camps in Cambridgeshire, and I have studied the Inns of Court so that I am well qualified in the law. I will not, of course, inherit my father's estate if my brothers live, but my father has settled upon me a generous portion, and I am at the moment negotiating to buy an estate of a malignant royalist through the Committee of Sequestration at Goldsmith Hall.
Robbery, sir! Robbery in broad daylight! You will not pay half its value for some other man's inheritance!
No, sir, the law, approved by Parliament in punishment for those people who brought a ruinous war upon their country. But all that concerns us here is that I am a sound man and capable of supporting your daughter as my wife in a manner, I may say, in excess of what she is accustomed to.
And is that all you have to say?
I wish formally for your permission to marry her.
That permission is refused. Is there anything else? Oh, be quiet, Francis.
That is the most naked insult to a gentleman, a soldier, and my very good friend.
It is no surprise to Captain Reynolds. I told him a month ago...
You realize, sir, the state of things at the moment, what it cost us to be here this morning.
That's enough, Francis.
There has never been any time in the whole history of our nation like this last week. This afternoon we must prepare to ride to the great army rendezvous at Cork Bush Field at Ware that will begin the building of a new Jerusalem in this country, a new order of things quite unknown since the Golden Age.
Your vaporings, my son, mean nothing to me. They are the dreams of a school.
And your insults to a leading member of God's army will not be looked on with any sort of approval.
Are you threatening me, sir?
The Committee of Sequestrations can look into the ownership of this estate too, Father, if we ask them to.
None of this is necessary.
And then you won't have the power to tyrannize over what you daughter should do and what she shouldn't do. When the estate's in my hands, I shall give my sister to my friend who loves her.
Shut up, Francis! I would have thought after last week you would begin to learn how to control your temper. Let me apologize, sir, on your son's behalf and assure you that no such course of action is intended or would even be possible. The committee is only empowered to look into the affairs of known royalists, and as far as I know, you have never materially supported the king.
I have never supported any of you! Nothing is ever gained by the sword except cartloads of dead men.
We will agree to differ there, as honest men sometimes do. But I think I have some right to know why you are so determined to forbid my marriage to your daughter and to deny her happiness as well as mine.
There's no reason, it's old man's
thing. Either be quiet, Francis, or leave
her. All right, sir. I will tell you. And we will have done with this business for good and all. I won't let my daughter marry you because I have her happiness at heart, and I don't wish to see her wear black before her time.
Wear black? You mean as a widow?
Yes, sir. A young widow.
Because I am a soldier, you mean?
No, sir. When you first asked for my daughter, I took the precaution of ascertaining your time and place of birth, and from that information, I cast the star chart of your horoscope. Death by water is written there. You will be drowned, sir, as a young man, soon. My son's fate is the same. It is written in his heavens, too, unavoidably. It is anguish to me, but must be endured. The same stars give my daughter a long life. She is not for you, sir, not for you.
I do not know what to say. This is the most heathen superstition, unworthy of a Christian.
You merely deepen the insult to Captain Reynolds, Father, with this childishness.
Well, while we talk of witnesses... Mum, Penelope, come in here.
What now?
Sir, you need not create playhouse scenes about the matter. I have heard and understood what you say.
What is it, Father?
Come in, both of you. Let you both witness that neither now nor at any time in the future will I give permission for Captain Reynolds to marry Penelope.
Oh, Father,
be quiet, Father. Have you gone mad?
Nor when I am dead. Should you or Captain Reynolds consider that my interdiction has no force, it is my eternal anathema never to be unsworn in this world or the next.
Okay. What's that?
What's going on down there?
What is it, Martha?
Francis,
Jack, here with you.
What is going on here, sir? Is my house to be turned into the public bedroom?
I can't bear it! I can't bear it!
Excuse me, sir, for bursting into your house in this manner, but I have the most urgent news for these gentlemen.
What is it, Lewis?
Francis, you must return to the Royal Mews at once, and you too, Jack, should report to your senior officers. We had a message from Hampton Court this morning. The king has escaped.
What? Where to?
No one knows. It was only discovered this morning. All officers are commanded to return to their regiments at once.
What does it mean, if the king is escaped?
Well, sir, we know no better than you do, but we can guess at the likelihood.
What we've all been afraid of for the last 6 months.
And what is that?
Another war.
In Discussions at Putney, Part 6 of God's Revolution by Don Taylor, Cromwell was played by Bernard Hepton, Fairfax by Nigel Anthony, White by Graham Blockie, and John Church by Eric Allen. Reynolds was Kim Wall, Rainsborough, John Badley, Ireton, Bill Wallace, and Huntingdon and Lockyer, Peter Craze. James Thompson was Simon Cuff, Brother Gerard, Steve Hodson, Edmund, Cornelius Garrett, Stephen White, David March, and Penelope, Deborah Makepeace. Isaac was Christopher Asante, Martha, June Barry, Lilburn, Christian Rodska, Elizabeth Lilburn, Maureen O'Brien, and Wildman, Stephen Rashbrook. God's Revolution, Part 6, was directed in Bristol by Ronald Mason.